A week ago Saturday was Transgender Day of Visibility, and I went down to the Pride celebration hosted by Equality Prince William. That's the county where I live. A member of a local Episcopal congregation invited me to learn more about their church. I told this person that I'm an ordained Unitarian Universalist minister, and they responded how much they appreciate what we UUs are doing. They pulled me aside and shared a bit more. Their partners' parents are UU, and so they know a lot about UUs in the world. Much needed change is taking place in this local Episcopal church. They are joining enlightened Presbyterians and evangelical congregations, as well as UUs, and being present for and to, as well as supportive of, people of all marginalized identities. I'm pleased to see more people of diverse faith traditions recognizing the inherent worth and dignity of all of us. The inspirations for today's worship service are threefold. First, I believe it is important to renew our recognition of those who have died in service to our nation, defending democracy both at home and abroad. Memorial Day began as a way to honor the servicemen and women who died for the cause of freedom and justice during World War I. With each military conflict since then, the number of those who risked their lives, who gave their lives to protect human rights, increases. So many, many human lives lost. Such disrespect endured. Pacifist or not, I wish for a world wherein our service members are peacekeepers practicing restorative justice. Second, I am aware that the Jewish holiday of Shavuot begins next Sunday evening. The Torah readings are from the book of Ruth, which focuses on remembering and living the Ten Commandments that Yahweh gave to Moses on Mount Sinai. The Ten Commandments give we humans the ground rules for living lives of loving human kindness. Most Hebrew scholars interpret the book of Ruth primarily on the basis of chesed, loving kindness, and loyalty shown by Ruth to her mother-in-law, and then by her mother-in-law and her extended family back home in Judea. Although it is short, it is not a simple story. Other interpretive lenses, women's, queer, and global, for example, raise issues pertinent to our present-day world, but that is not my main objective this morning. My third and primary inspiration this morning is that today is a big anniversary in the life of our faith tradition. You may or may not have already picked up on this, depending on how much of a Unitarian Universalist denominational or governance geek you are. Perhaps you know because you're planning to attend the UUA's General Assembly a month from now in Baltimore. Or maybe you've already delved into the UU World Edition, which is focused on the 200th anniversary of the American Unitarian Association, or AUA for short. On May 25th in 1825, there was at the Berry Street Conference a proposal regarding the benefits of and the need for some sort of organizational structure for American Unitarian churches. Imagine, there wasn't any organization before that. The next day, May 26th, the AUA was officially formed with the approval of bylaws. And coincidentally, the British and Foreign Unitarian Association was also formed on May 25th in 1825. This morning, we honor our Unitarian lineage and the paths along which we trod. In particular, we take time to honor these first official acts of claiming the name Unitarian, which up until that time had been used primarily as a pejorative term. Believe it or not, it was a bold step, not unlike the modern examples of marginalized groups 2 centuries later who proudly reclaim identity labels such as Black, queer, transgender, and so on. Some of us here this morning know how important, how empowering and important self-naming our identity or identities is to those who are members of marginalized communities. And let me interrupt myself briefly with an editorial aside. While I intend to guide you on a journey touching upon our Unitarian history in this sermon, I want to encourage all of us to read through this spring-summer 2025 edition of the UU World magazine, either online or in print, to learn more than I can cover with you this morning. I'm aware that I have chosen to focus on different aspects of our Unitarian history than others of my colleagues. The creation of the AUA as an official institution was an empowering event similar to identity labeling. In the beginning, the AUA was a member organization for individuals. Congregations didn't become members of the AUA until more than 6 decades later, in 1884, when the hero of this morning's wisdom story, or time for all ages, Reverend Jenkin Lloyd Jones, was blazing trails in America's heartland for the Western Unitarian Conference. Bear in mind, though, that the Unitarians were never as evangelical about their faith as the Universalists, who put a great deal of energy into evangelizing by horseback and itinerant preachers, much like the Methodists. I was delighted that Ann Richards decided to introduce us to Jenkin Lloyd Jones this morning. He is highly respected by many UU historians. I received my own Master of Divinity degree from Meadville Lombard Theological School in Chicago. By the way, Lombard College was founded in Illinois as a Universalist school, and I was able to attend the 130th Parliament of World Religions in Chicago just 2 years ago. Jenkin Lloyd Jones was neither the first nor the most recent innovator within our faith tradition. He was not the first pacifist in our midst, nor the first to value the wisdom teachings of the world's myriad religious and philosophical traditions. Jenk and Susan, though clearly paving a path for gender equality, were also not the first to live in a marriage of mutual care and beliefs, or espouse the rights of women and work for the abolition of slavery. Before Lloyd Jones was born in 1843, and not long after the AUA was founded in 1825, there developed among the Unitarians in Boston a movement that was very different from the status quo. It was the Transcendentalist movement, with which we most often associate Henry David Thoreau and Ralph Waldo Emerson, among others. You'll probably be surprised to hear from me that Ralph Waldo Emerson lifted many of his supposedly innovative ideas directly out of his Aunt Mary Moody Emerson's almanacs, her personal journals, in which she recorded her thoughts. Randall Fuller writes about this Boston area bright circle in a book about the lives of 5 remarkable women in the age of transcendentalism. The women were the aforementioned Mary Moody Emerson, plus Elizabeth Palmer Peabody, along with her sisters Sophia Peabody, an artist who was married to Nathaniel Hawthorne, and Lydia Jackson Emerson, married to Ralph Waldo's brother, as well as the early feminist thinker, Margaret Fuller, who held her conversations in Elizabeth Peabody's Boston bookstore. This conversation society was for women only, and they thought to answer the great questions of special importance to women, including, what are we born to do? What shall we do? And how shall we do it? In an early February Faith and Leadership article titled, It's Time to Reclaim Creativity, Pastor Chris Aho, director of the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship Thriving Congregations Initiative, Right. Things change, styles change, sensibilities change, manners change, language changes. It feels as if everything is changing and there's no going back. He continues, I think the primary task of navigating change is to keep learning. Aho reflects on his career journey in terms of changes in language. He remembers using the word creative all the time. However, it seems to have fallen out of favor. Our own Reverend Leah Ongiri would probably wholeheartedly agree, saying, without imagination, how will we know where we are going? In fact, the March 2025 edition of Quest, a publication of the Church of the Larger Fellowship, is thematically focused on imagination. The early transcendentalists, like Ralph Waldo Emerson, leaning heavily upon his Aunt Mary's writings, have encouraged us to employ imagination in our search for truth and meaning. Mary Emerson defended the imagination and asserted her belief that religious insights were unreachable by reason and logic alone. In doing so, she was, of course, assailing the foundations of Unitarian thought. Imagination was a faculty that proceeded not by an almost endless chain of reasonings, but by intuitive leaps, flashes of perception, epiphanies, and revelations. Most important, this superior form of knowledge was a feminine ability that we, in her statement, referred to women unschooled in philosophy, but gifted with insight. As Reverend Frederick Muir says, our transcendentalist ancestors bequeathed us theological imagination, the idea that the future's promise is always aspirational is foundational to hope. I agree with Mary Emerson, Pastor Aho, Reverend Ongiri, and the March Quest editors and contributors that imagination is a powerful spiritual tool. CLF Learning Fellow Catherine Hoffman writes, all the goal-setting gurus tell us to envision our futures and act as if it is already true. In other words, to use our imaginations to create our reality. I believe that our spiritual reality is drawn from imagination as well. In my experience, this is the purpose of a vision quest, a traditional tool of indigenous communities and New Age spiritual practitioners alike. Recently, I had the privilege to attend the Spark Theological Convocation held at the UU congregation in Fairfax, Virginia. Reverend Alice was there as well. During the 3 days, those gathered discussed our history, the new Article II language of UU values and covenant adopted at last year's General Assembly, and what might our UU theologies be when we center love. We strive to use our imaginations and be creative. In the book, Love at the Center, Mary Catherine Morn, a convocation attendee, wrote, imagine love as a force that frees us, each and all, to the fullness of our humanity. Imagine that love centered at like distance from every point on the circle. Imagine the community care that holds the tension of the circumference and the radius. Or as Reverend Jason Leiden put it in his essay in the same volume, radical love is creative, visionary, and relational. Beyond such a conference setting, religious professionals and congregational members alike are asking, what does it mean to live out these values of justice, equity, transformation, pluralism, interdependence, and generosity? Jet pig. As much as I resisted it initially, really, it is a useful mnemonic device. Just one example of this theological questing is our Congregational Study Action Issue process, which is returning to our work during and between General Assemblies. I found the online discussion session for the CSAI entitled Abolition is Faith Formation especially powerful in the sense that it will engage us in deep theological questions and acts of relational justice. The presenters stated that we have to imagine to make it happen. And that's just one of three congregational study action issues being proposed that the delegates will vote on at General Assembly. We have to imagine the future of our faith to make it happen. And what I would like to do now is to have you break into small groups of three or four people to share with each other your creative imaginings about the future of our faith. How can we best live our shared values? What will a powerful and influential UUA look like? What kinds of change will our UU congregations and their individual members create in the years ahead? How will we effectively share the good news of Unitarian Universalism? And you might want to have somebody in your group take a few notes so that you'll be able to succinctly share luminous ideas with the rest of us when we conclude our sharing with each other. So we're going to pause for about 3 to 5 minutes, turn to people near you, and have a little conversation. I know that was far too short. You're only just beginning the conversation, but I'd love to hear what bubbled up to the surface in your imaginations and imaginings, your creativity this morning. You can just shout it out and I'll repeat it back. There may be a theme that comes out of this. I don't know. We'll see. I can start with what Wendy shared with me, and that is that and it happened to me too during the Time for All Ages when the image of the community center, the Abraham Lincoln Community Center, was on the screen. She thought, oh, that's what I want for us here at UU Loudoun to have with our new space that we're moving towards, and being able to be more of a place where community comes and we reach out to community. So other ideas that came up, anybody want to share something? Yeah.
UU to become a louder voice for truth and love so more people know who we are.
UU to become a louder voice for truth and love so more people know who we are. Yes.
Arthur also said, be louder and more visible.
Be louder and more visible. And it was a theme, I preached the same service last week, and it was a theme that came out of that service as well.
Basically, somewhere we've been doing all this work for all this time, but yet many people don't know anything about what we're all about here. And right now, in this climate, in this country, what we're doing is more important than ever. We need to make it right. We need people to know who we are.
And the long and short of it is, we need to be more evangelical, quite frankly. I saw somebody, you know, doing something sort of like this to that. Yeah. Anybody else? Any other ideas? Yeah. That's good. Take ownership.
Invite conversation with younger people because older people are more fixed and younger people are going to be the change. And secondly, find solidarity with immigrants, not just because my partner is one, but that's what I believe in general.
So cross-generational, so a really truly intergenerational dialogue and learning together. is helpful. And of course, across cultures and communities and everything else. Yes, definitely. Yeah.
We talked a lot about love being at the center.
Yes.
And what that means practically.
What does it practically mean to have love at the center?
In all of our individual or congregation, the community, the world.
Uh-huh.
Keeping love at the center.
What does that look like?
What does that look like? We came up with more questions.
That's okay. I was actually listening to something on the radio this morning that suggested that when you're with people who have a different mindset or a different worldview from yours, questions are more important than taking a stand necessarily. Invite the curiosity and the wonder, as we say in our religious education and exploration classes. Yes. Well, I'm going to take one more.
Sorry.
No problem.
We talked about visibility, authenticity already. I would just add two small things, one bigger thing. Storytelling, right? So we talked a lot about the history that I didn't know, maybe other people in the room didn't know as well. And I think that storytelling is really important, and spreading the word about that, and owning our history and spreading that history.
Yeah.
The last bigger idea is relating to artificial intelligence. So when we talk about connecting to youth, connecting to current generations, how do we leverage the tools and the technologies that are coming with artificial intelligence? So what does that look like? It was one of the things that we talked about. So some congregations are already using AI, and one way that you could use this is analyze all of the sermons that we've had over the last 20 years, right? Then look at all of the current events that are happening in the world, all of them, right? And then come up with a way that we can come up with a plan of action where we can make a difference, right? And there's a way to develop a service all around that, right? What songs would be appropriate? What homilies would be appropriate? What actions can we do as a congregation?
Mm-hmm. So lots of deep thinking going on in that group. With regard to the AI piece of what you shared, there is a colleague, Reverend Peter Bowden, who is exploring AI and using it within our faith tradition, not just out in the world. So that's something to be aware of. And and the storytelling, I think that fits kind of nicely with the AI, right? The more we tell our stories, the better informed the AI is going to be. And storytelling is love. It's a way of sharing your love with others. So I'm going to leave it there and let you have further conversations in the days and months ahead, imagining your future, because you're right on the cusp of something big and grand here in Loudoun. And I'm going to end with these words and a couple of tacked on thoughts by Reverend Michael O. Slack, who has written, "Longing is often a vehicle for imagination, redirection, and change. And it can be the energy that drives us towards becoming more of who we say we want to be, both within our congregations and affiliated organizations and out in the world." Again, we have to imagine the future of our faith to make it happen. Thank you for being a people of faith, building and living our UU values out loud and proud in the world.